Silence.
Oppenheimer.
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerf Right Radio.
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 245 of Nerd Pride Radio. 245, LET-245, is a C. elegans gene, which is embryonic lethal. That is a fact given to me by the lovely Sarah Beth, who saved me a whole ton of grueling research. Now, embryonic lethal sounds really depressing, but I thought, you know, C. elegans is the species that she works on in her laboratory. That's her job. And it occurred to me, she's mentioned it before, I, you know, should really look it up and have an idea of what this little guy is. And it turns out, C. elegans is a roundworm. And it's only like a millimeter long. It's like teeny tiny. But roundworm meaning that it has actually a full digestive system that goes, you know, from mouth in front to anus and back, or at least I hope it goes in that order. And I'm sure there's all sorts of much more interesting facts about C. elegans than just that. But it turns out that C. elegans is the type species for its genus. So, meaning this is the prime example of what they're supposed to look like, supposedly, the base species, I guess. You know what? Sarah Beth should really be on here describing this herself, but she's not. So, anyway, as I'm looking it up, alright, roundworms, they are nematodes, alright, and I found Nathan Cobb, a nematologist who is listed as the father of nematology in the U.S. So this is a dude who studied roundworms and pioneered their study in this country. Okay, great. And he described the ubiquity of nematodes in this fashion. This is looking at nematodes across the world, their placement, their prolific nature. And he says, and this is a direct quote from him, in short, if all the matter in the universe except nematodes were swept away, our world would still be dimly recognizable, and if, as disembodied spirits, we could then investigate it, we should find mountains, hills, vales, rivers, lakes, and oceans represented by a film of nematodes where the earth had been. The location of towns would be decipherable, since for every massing of human beings, there would be a corresponding massing of certain nematodes. Trees would still stand in ghostly rows represented by representing our streets and highways. The locations of the various plants and animals would still be decipherable, and, had we sufficient knowledge, in many cases, we could even determine their species by an examination of their erstwhile nematode parasites. And this ends with an exclamation point because super excited about this. The idea is that nematodes are so prolific. There are so many nematodes on the earth, so many different species, so much mere mass of them that they're everywhere and they're in everything. They're in most living mammals, I would probably guess all, but I'm going to say most, have nematode parasites. They're in our soil. They're in our plants. They're in everything. They're all over the place. And I never really pay much attention because, I don't know, I've never noticed them. So, you know, as it were, I found this fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. So, having said all of that, ask me how I'm doing today. Go on, ask me. I am awesome! My name is Mike Jones. I am a D&D/Pathfinder nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd, plus, there's like seven other kinds of nerd. I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You are listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my skull anymore. Oof. As always, we are recording this live from our lavish Nerd Pride Radio studios in Orthanc Tower. Welcome. Alright, let's see. It's time for the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast. This is the time for me when I talk about whatever's been on my mind for the last week. Something strikes me as interesting during the course of my busy week. I add it to my master list, and then the very best stuff off of that list gets spewed out all over you guys every week when I record. You lucky dogs. First up on the master list, Pod People.
Pod People. Pod People. Pod People.
Listen, I'm tired of the news, okay? I am trying to distance myself from the news right now and, I don't know, revitalize myself. I've invested myself into customizing Spotify to get some decent playlists, and I've been enjoying music. I've been looking for some podcasts that are, light, entertaining, and, to that end, the newest podcast I found is called Threedom. Threedom. That's right. Spelled exactly like it sounds. Like freedom, but with the word three at the beginning. And Threedom is, there's only two episodes out right now. They have an entire season that's behind a paywall somewhere, but they're now releasing the episodes for free as well. And they're doing them, you know, once every week or every 2 weeks or whatever it is. And Threedom is a podcast by, there are three of them, on the podcast, and, they are, oh gosh darn it, I know who they are, I just had their credits here, so I wanted to make sure I didn't miss them. Alright, Paul F. Tompkins, who I love, these are all comedians, Paul F. Tompkins, who, was one of the main voices on Thrilling Adventure Hour, he was in There Will Be Blood, I love Paul F. Tompkins, I think he's really funny, and his voice, for me at least, is instantly recognizable. Also, Lauren Lapkus, who was part of Comedy Bang Bang. She played a one of the prison guards in early seasons of Orange is the New Black. And then also Scott Aukerman, who is mostly a comedy writer, for Comedy Bang Bang. He wrote for Between Two Ferns, a bunch of other stuff. So anyway, three very talented, very funny people who I like from other venues. And now it turns out the three of them were on tour like a year and a half ago, on a comedy tour together. And they had so much fun hanging out that after the tour was over, they started working on, well, what could we do to just hang out? And so it turns out that the answer is Threedom. And this is a podcast where it's just the three of them just talking. And they are just super funny, and it is really entertaining. I love listening to them. Again, only two episodes so far, and I am having a blast with it. I really enjoy this. Again, it's mostly just talking. They will bring, every episode, apparently, one of them is going to bring a thing that they do. And so, for example, for the first episode, Lauren brought a game called, Yeah, I Gotta Go. And the idea is it has to be three people. They have to improvise it. And all three of them have to have a really boring, very serious conversation. And one of them, as whoever's designated, has to leave the conversation, has to find a spot to laugh at something and then excuse themselves from the conversation. This sounds really, really dull, but to listen to them play it out, really funny. Because again, they were working their asses off to make it really awkward to laugh at anything they say. And so watching them put it together, it was just a cute little piece of improv. They spent like 5 minutes on it, and each of them got a turn to try and excuse themselves from the awkward conversation. Tons of fun. So, so far, you know, like I say, a couple episodes in, I'm just really enjoying it. So, if you're looking for something that, is not, related to current events in any way, and just is a place to unwind and, turn off your brain for a little bit and be entertained, this is a good one. So, Threedom. Go look for it. It's wherever you get your podcasts, I assume. All right. What do I have next? Oh, Science Corner.
Oh, she blinded me with science.
She blinded me with science.
Blinded me with science.
And that music means if you don't walk away now, you might be in danger of learning something. Okay, this is going to be my one slightly depressing topic of the entire show. But I promise it won't be bad. And then right after it, still in the science corner, I will offer you some more hopeful science that gets me really excited. So, first is China's internet. This is the slightly depressing part. And China has an absolute lock on their internet. They have, the thing is heavily censored and filtered. And it's amazing that they have huge teams of people in China whose sole job is to watch for things that are in the news worldwide, watch for things that are trending on the internet, and find a way to keep anything that might contradict the Chinese party line, keep it from appearing on the Chinese internet in any way. That's it. So when people are criticizing the Chinese government, that gets filtered out. When the Panama Papers were released, the Panama Papers had all sorts of information in them that included banking information for offshore accounts that, among, like I say, lots of people implicated around the world, but within China, it was like 7 or 8 really wealthy and influential people within Chinese government who, according to the Panama Papers, were funneling money, people's money, government money, out of the country and into these offshore accounts. And this looked really bad for them. And like within 15 minutes, you couldn't even find out that the country of Panama existed in China. All right, it obviously doesn't exist in China. It exists in Central America. But the whole point is that if you were in China and you were looking for anything related to Panama, you weren't going to find it. And then they refined their filters a little bit more so that finally you can see the country of Panama. But the Panama Papers, nowhere to be found. And they were quick. I mean, it was minutes. And they had it all blocked. And so this is just amazingly powerful. I mean, they are a quarter of the world's population. They are huge. They are the largest economy on Earth. They are powerful. And yes, over the years there have been quote-unquote capitalist reforms within China, that they've had some loosening of different things, blah, blah, blah. But they're still pretty tight-fisted. I mean, yes, you might see some stuff around the edges that is, you know, hopeful in some ways, that maybe Chinese society is loosening up. But boy, don't you believe it. Man, they are really working to lock this crap down. So, having said that, it was interesting as I followed this article. This is all from Popular Science, by the way, because I listened to the Weirdest Thing I Learned This Week podcast from Popular Science, from the editors over there. I was following up on some of their stuff from their podcast, and I was reading Popular Science, and just, they have some fascinating stuff. And according to this, part of the filters on the internet are that they have to, people who are trying to speak out within China have to find coded ways to communicate with one another that are going to beat the filters, or at least stay ahead of the filters for a while, and then they have to change again. So, for example, the word censorship is ironically censored in China. You can't say censorship in China. And so whenever they wanted to talk about something being censored, people would refer to it as being harmonized, because they were talking about, it's a reference to a Chinese doctrine or paper that referred to a truly harmonized society where people can all think alike and be, and so they referred to sensitive information being harmonized when it was no longer, you know, when you could no longer find it. And then ultimately the censors caught on to that and realized that people were using that. So the use of the word harmonized in that context suddenly got censored as well and disappeared. And so to take it another step beyond that, the apparently Chinese word, and I don't know if it's Mandarin or Cantonese, but Chinese word for harmonized is very similar to the Chinese word for water crab. And so therefore, they just started saying that the things had been water crabbed. And so it goes. And now the fact that the water crab term is appearing in a popular science article in the United States means that the Chinese censors are probably wise to that one, and they've had to move on again. And so therefore, all of this was very interesting in and of itself, but it also caught my eye because it mentioned how the Chinese president, Xi Jinping, resembles to some of the people in his country, resembles Winnie the Pooh in the way he walks. He's kind of got a little waddle to him. And so I remember John Oliver on his show making fun of the Chinese because images of Winnie the Pooh are banned in China. And the way the news was presenting that at the time, and John Oliver wasn't the only one to say this, but the way the news was presenting it is, oh, those Chinese, look how overly sensitive their leader is, that, oh my God, people start making fun of him, and so he bans all instances of Winnie the Pooh. And that's not the truth. The truth is that you can't say anything bad about Xi Jinping in China because it will get censored. But you could criticize Winnie the Pooh as this code that people know that, oh, if you say Winnie the Pooh, you're talking about him. And so the reason that Winnie the Pooh is banned is because, well, they were using it not as a comparison to make fun of him, because that wasn't really making fun of him. A lot of them found that kind of endearing. But it was being used as a way to criticize him without getting caught or without getting censored. And, once the government got wise to that, they obviously stopped allowing people to use Winnie the Pooh in that context. And, because, like people in the U.S. have done, where you go to Twitter and Twitter has had a 140 word limit or 140 character limit, and they upped it to 280, whatever. But a lot of people have always gotten around that by, well, yeah, but if I just post an image can have as many damn words as I want in it. And so they did. Well, the Chinese have done the same sort of thing where they use a lot of images for stuff, because it is a lot harder for the automatic filters to catch some of the images, although they're getting really good at it. So, interesting. And the depressing part about this is that, again, it's a quarter of the world's population. It is the largest economy on Earth. They are taking over a lot of leadership roles in the world, especially as the U.S. is very intentionally becoming more isolationist. And so therefore, they're going to be the biggest superpower in the world within a few years. And they're going to rule for a long time. And they are certainly locking down the tools to make sure that they can hold on to that power as long as possible. So, scary. All right, but that's enough of that. That's the depressing part. All right, next is a new planet called the Goblin. All right? A new planet in our solar system called the Goblin. Now, if that doesn't make you happy just right off, I don't know what can. All right? You're lost at this point. The Goblin, which I've heard of before, the Goblin was actually discovered 3 years ago. But it's making news now because they've identified more information about it. They've done all the calculations on it. And it is just exciting. Now, the first exciting thing for me is that as I'm watching the video about this and they're announcing this discovery of the planet the Goblin, which is not its official name, it's just what everyone's calling it now until they can nail down its classification and then give it an official name after that, and then it'll be something from mythology like all the rest of them. But when they announced this, they said, scientists have discovered a new planet in our solar system. See? Now, I know, even before they start talking, I know that the Goblin is a dwarf planet, and thus technically not a real planet, which I've always just called them planets. You guys have heard me argue about it. I love that dwarf planets are just planets. We have dwarf planets, we have terrestrial planets, and then we have giant planets. Three categories of planets, but they're all planets. Why do we have to limit it all to eight? Why do we have to keep saying eight when we have dwarf planets with planets right in the name, right? Okay. So we're all on board with me here. And what I loved is the news report, even though it is a dwarf planet, They just said, we've discovered a new planet. They just called it a planet because that's how it should be. Oh, it was so awesome. We've discovered a planet. And then later they mentioned that, yes, you know, they have to still, you know, finish their measurements and nail down the size and all this. And yeah, ultimately it's going to be a dwarf planet. Yes. But dwarf planet is just a classification that, you know, is on top of the fact that it's a planet. I love that. All right. But why is the goblin noteworthy? Because we have lots of dwarf planets and we're discovering new ones all the time. And, I mean, there's maybe 20 of them out there that have been identified as potential dwarf planets, but we haven't actually finished all the measurements on them yet. We don't really know for sure. Okay. So there's lots of them out there. Why is the goblin special? Because the goblin is the latest in a series of dwarf planets that all have stupid orbits. Okay? Their orbits, the closest they get to the sun is still way out past Pluto, like twice the distance of Pluto. So they are way outside of all the rest of our stuff. And then they go on these long 20,000 to 40,000, maybe even more year orbits where they go way out. Like they're going from, you know, twice the distance of Pluto out to, you know, a whole, almost a light year out. I mean, they are way out there and then they make their trip back. And there's probably hundreds and hundreds of these things out there. But there's a bunch of them that are on these long orbits like this that normally you would think dwarf planets would have randomized orbits out there. If, you know, in general, they should just randomly be, you know, you'll find some here, some there, blah, blah, blah. But we don't. We find them all in specific patterns. They're in order. And they're all pointing in the same general direction. These long elongated orbits, they all point in the same general direction, and there's a periodicity to them basically they have some order to them when they shouldn't. And within the inner solar system, with our eight traditional planets and all the associated nonsense that we have in here, we have some trans-Neptunian objects that come in and out, and they are they have a specific period and they have specific orbits that are guided by the gas giants. So these are shepherded by the gas giants, and thus they fall, the orbits of these inner system stuff all fall within certain patterns. Well, okay, but the goblin and all of its brothers and sisters are too far out to be affected by the gas giants that we know of. Therefore, yeah, that we know of, right? Right? Therefore, it means there's another giant out there. It'll be an ice giant. It'll be like Neptune and Uranus. And it'll be, I said Uranus. Okay. It'll be, if everything lines up the way they're thinking, the measurements they have of these, several dwarf planets that all do this, it would be a planet that is probably about 10 times the mass of Earth. And thus probably two or three times as wide as the Earth in diameter. It'll be about the size of, like, Neptune. And that is amazing. Absolutely amazing that there is an ice giant out there. And the sucker's just so far away that we just haven't spotted it yet. And with our current technology, they've said, yeah, there's nothing that we've done that would rule out the possibility of that existing. Hey, train! I haven't had a train during a podcast in a long time. That's awesome. But anyway, super exciting. Now they're saying, this, and it's Planet 9 or Planet X, whatever you want to call it. I've talked about it before with the same sort of, facts about it. But, Planet 9 is not confirmed in any way, but the evidence just keeps mounting, and the goblin is just one more chunk of evidence on this pile that says, yeah, wow, if this Planet 9 is not out there looking approximately the way we think it will, then something really, really bizarre is going on in the solar system, and we need another very extreme situation. I mean, like, if we don't have an ice giant Planet 9 sitting out there, then it means that whatever the real explanation is going to be at least as interesting as finding a whole nother planet, giant planet, out past Pluto. All right? That's what's exciting here, is that we either have we either have an ice giant out there that we've never seen before, or something even more interesting is happening. That's what gets me going. Now, my first thought on putting all this together is, oh my God. Well, then all we need is the James Webb Space Telescope. And if we had that, why, we could be taking a good look out here and we'll spot it in no time, right? And so, now you guys remember the very first time I talked about James Webb on this podcast? James Webb was due in the far distant year of 2018. Okay. Which, last time I looked, which 6, 8, 10 months ago, it turns out that they had delayed it a little bit and pushed it back to 2019. Now this is, okay. Did you ever watch, Viva Variety? From the people that brought you The State, from, the people who brought you, Reno 911. Alright, it was Viva Variety. It was like a little show and it didn't last very long on Comedy Central. But, one of my favorite bits out of Viva Variety. It was I think like 1998 is when the show, was created. Right around there. It was like just a year or two before, Y2K. And, Michael Ian Black played the dumb guy on the show. And so there's this one bit where, and it's just a stupid European style variety show. And that's what they were using as their base. And it was really funny. But, Michael Ian Black was, as the dumb guy, the dumb performer on the show, he comes in and he's talking about his really cool movie that he's starring in now. And it's I can't remember the name of his stupid movie, but it's some post-apocalyptic sci-fi thing. And he's really proud of it. So they're showing a clip from the movie. And then the host has to turn and say, I'm sorry, when did they say this movie was set? And he's like, oh, it's in the future, in the year 2000. And he would say it like that every time. And finally they're like, you know, the year 2000 is like 2 years from now. It's a, no, this is in the future. You don't understand. It's the year 2000. So, whenever I talk about the far future that is not terribly far away at all, I use that voice. So that's why I'm doing that. But anyway, it turns out that, the last time I looked, James Webb is supposed to be online 2019. Right. Okay. Turns out, I went in, now seeing the Goblin news, I went in and looked again, and oh my God, they've put it off to 2021! Are you kidding me? Ah! And part of me is thinking that, okay, are we, you know, we are not funding science at the same levels that we used to, and so therefore, is this a result of a lack of funding? Is that, and it turns out no, which is good, because I mean, look, our current president, our current administration, you gotta know that having the largest telescope on Earth, having the biggest and the best, is really something that we can be proud of. And the thing is built. I mean, it's like done. Is now it's just a matter of fine tuning and working out the launch details and all of this. So, I mean, it's a completed telescope. We just have to get it to space to get credit for it. So, so James Webb is gonna happen, but oh man, they're making me wait for this thing. So I'm telling you, it's a telescope that can see the beginning of the universe. Who doesn't want to see that? Oh my God. It's not going to see the beginning of the universe because things are going to get a little hazy once the universe gets hot enough. But you know, we'll see back to, I don't know, it's really close to the beginning of the universe. Oh, darn it. Okay, but I can wait. 2021. Come on, that's not that far off, right? Yeah, we'll just wait. All right. Next up, it's my unnamed history segment.
Don't know much about history.
Okay. On the unnamed history segment, I'm going to tell you about a guy named James Adair. James Adair was born in 1714 in Ireland. He was James Adair the Cooper. He was a barrel maker. Before he then came to the United States, well, came to the American colonies, and found himself in the region of South Carolina, and he started trading with the Indians. All right, so he spent 40 years, we think. Well, we know. 40 years living among the Indians. I mean, he was the first Dances with Wolves. All right, 40 years he lived among the Indians, with minimal contact with the civilized world, as it were. After leaving them and coming back to real society, which I think he just did because he was starting to get old. After 40 years there, he's like 60, 65, something like that. And so he comes back to quote-unquote civilization, and his friends convince him that, you know, you should really write all this down. I mean, seriously, you have more firsthand experience than any other white person we know dealing with Native Americans, so therefore you should write it down. And so he, in the foreword and acknowledgement in his book, he very grudgingly, you know, he admits that, oh yeah, well, you know, I'm not really an author, I don't want to be seen that way, but, you know, since people are insisting, here, let me tell you how it happens. And so he wrote a book called The History of the American Indians. And the book is still available today. Like, you can get reprints of it today. I mean, we saw them being sold for like, you know, $30-$40. But, you know, why would you do that when you can just go to Google Books and just read the darn thing for free? It's right there. James Adair, A-D-A-I-R, The History of the American Indians. And it is credited as being one of the first accounts that showed the Native Americans as real human beings. It talked about their culture and the roles of different people within their society and how their medicines worked and their spiritual beliefs. And it was just fascinating, all right? It's all sorts of great stuff. And again, to present them as just human beings. Whereas, you know, up till now, the, you know, Native Americans, Indians, were the stuff of high adventure tales. And, you know, they were these brutal savages and they were these, you know, they were the stuff of stories. And this actually humanized them and, a really important piece of literature. And, on top of that, he also devoted a good third of the book to proving that Native Americans were descended from one of the 10 lost tribes of Israel. Because apparently he had that burr up his butt, and he was really, really wrong about that. But, man, he was just convinced that, and I don't know if that, like he had to have, I don't know if he had to have some proof that they were, you know, descended from good genteel folk somewhere that would explain why they were human. I have no idea. I don't know what requirement he had, but man, this was a really important theory to him. And it turns out he was very, very wrong, but the rest of his book, interesting. Now, the reason I bring up James Adair, and the reason I know about James Adair at all, because I just found out about him this last week, is because he is a direct ancestor of mine. Okay? Like 10 generations back, direct ancestor. And which I thought was super cool. And it turns out that, first off, my wife has always been interested in genealogy, and looking up family history stuff. She has kept a family history for her own family since she, you know, did one as a school project back in junior high or high school or something like that. And she has kept all that with all the pictures she's gathered and the documentation. And so, and it's never been a serious hobby. She hasn't devoted a lot of time to it, but it's something that fascinates her, and she really enjoys that. And so, she just had a birthday, and one of her birthday gifts is a year subscription to MyHeritage.com, which she had been on there playing around with MyHeritage anyway. But, and they'll give you a ton of information for free, because that's how they get you. They give you a taste, and then, you know, she kind of hits a brick wall, and it's like, well, you know, but if you had the full subscription, why, look at all the stuff we could share with you. And so we did. And, I mean, the floodgates just opened. There was just so much cool stuff. And so she went back a little further on her family than she had been able to before, and was really excited about that. But then we started looking at my family, which, okay, now, my grandmother on my dad's side was also a genealogist, named Jeannie. Is that funny? Okay. She had collected a whole bunch of information about our family, but Some of it contained really fantastic tales, like, you know, James Adair and the fact that through him we may have some Native American ancestry on that side and that kind of thing. And for the most part, lots of people just thought she was kind of a cracked old lady because, you know, how can you really prove all this stuff? Well, as it turns out, the same sort of stuff that she has, and we have a book that she helped co-write about family histories, a lot of the stuff that she put in the book actually matches what we're also finding on MyHeritage that comes with all sorts of documentation going way back. And so it's just super cool. We're just having fun. I'm not trying to sell anybody on MyHeritage.com at all. Although, I mean, if any of them are listening and want to give me a paid sponsorship, yeah, I'm cool with that. But it was just a lot of fun. And so, yeah, we were able to trace back to James Adair, among others. I mean, there's just all sorts of people. And with him, yeah, he spent 40 years in Indian Territory, and during that 40 years, he did marry and have a son, James Adair Jr. And presumably the woman he took to be his wife would have been a Chickasaw woman, because that's who he was living among for all that time. But no one ever actually specifically says. All we know, we have no family history for her at all. All we know is her name was Eleanor, which, you know, could mean anything. So maybe, maybe not. If so, if Eleanor was from the Chickasaw people, that would make me 0.1% Native American on that side. So I'm sure that qualifies me for a scholarship somewhere. Also, following up on Native American ancestry, because I've mentioned this before, that my mom had told us on the last vacation we went on with them, had told us that, oh yeah, her grandma was Cherokee. And it was like, what, just out of nowhere. Oh yeah, 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 my grandma Jewel, she was Cherokee. Yeah. And it's like, I've never heard this before in my life. And so we actually had a chance now to follow up on that. And it turns out that Grandma Jewel is in fact Cherokee. I don't know, it's really hard to tell because a lot of times all you have is just names of people. So, it's hard to tell, from just a name, what, you know, ethnic heritage might be. But, we can follow back to where, one of Grandma Jewel's, well, for me, great-grandma Jewel, one of great-grandma Jewel's ancestors, way back, also, again, South Carolina, in Chickasaw County, one of her ancestors there was a reverend's daughter who married a man named Micajah, who, presumably, because, her father, the reverend, was ministering to the Native Americans in the area, and so, presumably, Micajah was a Christianized American Indian that was part of her father's flock, we're guessing, and thus entered that side of the family into the record. And as you follow it down, I mean, again, no idea how much of what side played in, but right around Trail of Tears time, all of a sudden, yeah, the whole family there just up and moves from South Carolina to Oklahoma. So, we're guessing, yeah, Grandma Jewel, Native American. But again, I don't know how much of that to count, but, fascinating. Very interesting. And, last thing about that is Grandma Jewel's family was, their last name was Creed. And they had some of the coolest names. All right. Back then it was, I think it was Micajah's, siblings all had these great names. And one of them was a sister, Thirsa. And Thirsa Creed went by the name Thirsty. And I just thought, oh my God, if I had to make a role-playing game character set in some kind of Wild West, setting like that, Thirsty Creed, oh my God, you couldn't get a better name than Thirsty Creed. How cool is that? So anyway, I'm probably boring you to death. This is all super fascinating to me because, you know, it directly relates to me. And okay, maybe it's fascinating to my brother and my mom who are listening. But other than that, yeah, if I'm boring you, sorry guys. But, again, the amount of stuff that you can learn even without a subscription over at MyHeritage is pretty impressive. So, you know, if you're interested in that sort of thing and you just want to give it a taste, try it out. But, if not, you know, that's cool too. Whatever. The whole point is, I learned a lot and it's super exciting. And this is just what my wife has done with, like, you know, 4 days with this website. We haven't even really gone digging terribly deep into anything yet. So, I'm excited. All right. That is the end of the meticulously plotted portion of the podcast. Now it's time for the Pod-O-Matic. And it's not turned on, of course. Hot dog. This is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring on R2 in his fully pimped out Pod-O-Matic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. And where do these topics come from, you ask? Well, that is where you come in. You want to hear me haver on about something? You send your question or topic to me by email, or better yet, in a private message on my forums. I will add it to my Pod-O-Matic list because Pod-O-Matic is about whatever you want it to be. All right, and our first number is 90. So that takes a little rolling, so hold on. Oh, click, click, click. There we go, 90. It's from Ronster. Hey, Ron. Ron says, what is the fastest way to become a member of the Nerd Pride Radio inner circle? Okay, then he follows that up with, don't lie to me, I know there is one. Oh, dude, all right, the fastest way to get into the Nerd Pride Radio inner circle is first, join the website, all right, sign up for my forums, send me Pod-O-Matic questions, all right, you're already well on your way there, and then participate in our games and stuff on the site. That's pretty much it. Boy, if you can get into one of our role-playing games with us, that's even better. Wait, you've done all of that. Oh, yeah, I think you're there, Ron. You know there are one because you is one. All right. Next up is 70. Or if you don't want to go through all the trouble of all that participation stuff, send me $100. I will let you right in. I will vouch for you. I will be your best friend in the world for a period up to a year for $100. I'm cheap. All right. Number 70 is from Mrs. Darks. And Mrs. Darks says, oh, I've done this one before. Do your sons follow birth order stereotypes? And Jacob being the super overachiever, or the more driven, focused one, yes. But I don't really know what all the birth order stereotypes are. All I remember is that the more sons a woman has, the more likely each subsequent son is to be gay. And so that would mean that Noah would be our most gay child, and we haven't hit that yet. But I don't know if that's a stereotype or if that's just, you know, an application of science. Although it says more likely to, but I've never actually looked at the numbers for, so how likely does that make it? I mean, like, rather than a 1 in 20 chance, now you've got a 1 in 15 chance? I mean, I don't even know what more likely means in that situation. That is 36. God, why am I having trouble reading my dice today? 36 is from... it's from Kaz. Have you gotten a chance to play with a 3D printer? Oh, no, but my kids have, and they make some cool stuff. My son Eli brought home a dragon that he printed off of the school's 3D printer. Jacob, I know, got to play with a 3D printer when he was in college, because they had one there in the computer department. So, yeah, my kids have had a chance to do it. I know Noah has played around with one as well, although I haven't seen any samples of his printing. So, anyway, but I have not. If I ever need to, like if I wanted to be printing out figures for Godball or some other game that I'm doing, as long as I have the specs for them, my local library, my public library now has a 3D printer where I can go in and just, for, you know, whatever the cost of materials is, print out anything I darn well please. Weird. So, and that just happened in the last few months. So, again, I haven't done it myself, but probably soon. Next one is 87. 87 is... Oh, there it is. It's Ronster again. All right. Ron says, what is something you have a hard time forgiving? I don't know. I forgive pretty easily, really. I'm kind of a softie that way. You know, someone, now, again, this doesn't really count because it's not even my place to give them forgiveness, but, you know, I've been pretty harsh when it comes to celebrities who, have acted really poorly, in terms of, mistreating women, mistreating children. I mean, look, I'm not terribly forgiving of Woody Allen. I'm not he's always my go-to example for this kind of thing. But, again, is that even really what you're talking about? Because, again, it's not my place to forgive them. So, but for people that I know, you know, the closer I am to somebody, the easier it is for me to just forgive. And I do that pretty easily. I mean, look, the hardest thing for me to forgive is people who are unrepentant about what they do. People who repeatedly, commit the same transgression and clearly are not sorry about it and have no intention of changing, despite the fact that they know the effect it has on other people and that other people really want them to change and they're not going to anyway. You know, that's a little harder for me, but I don't have any real specifics. Sorry. 33 is from... Dun, dun, drum roll, please. Jacob, hey! All right, hi, Jacob. Jacob says, what exactly is a tournament of lies? Oh, any modern election campaign. I mean, no matter how much you love your guy or girl, and you really want them, you know, want to believe that they are the one who's different from everybody else, it's still exaggerations and lies. It's just, that's the nature of the game. Ugh, sad. Sad. Okay, 25. 25 comes from Ronster again. Ronster's winning, guys. When is the last time you washed and waxed a car by hand? That would be when my dad made me do it. Like last week. So, no. Back in high school. Let's see. 52. 52 is also from Ronster. Apparently he didn't like the answer to the last one, so he's back for more. If you had a daughter, would you let her go on a date with a guy that drives a van? Yes. Absolutely, I would. Because, all right, first off, I'm not going to judge a guy for owning a van. I mean, now look, if it's a full-sized van and he proudly opens the door to show off the shag carpeting on every surface inside, plus a built-in waterbed, and, you know, I may have some reservations about the dude. But in general, look, guy's vehicle, you drive what you can get. And, you know, if I had a daughter and she's dating young dudes, and, I mean, age-appropriate one would assume, and that's the car he can afford, that's the car he stumbled into, I'm not going to judge him for that. And besides, not my place to decide whether or not she can date him. So, I mean, really, you know, again, like I say, there may be some certain situations where I can imagine that there might be something where I would judge a dude by his car, and I might have some reservations about a guy. But again, you know, if I had any actual serious concerns about a guy my my kid was dating, my guys or girls, doesn't make any difference. If I have concerns, I will address that with my kid and say, yeah, okay, now I noticed this. Is that, you know, you're cool with that? Is, you understand the consequences? Do you have a, you know, I mean, whatever the conversation has to be. But ultimately, it's not up to me to let my children date somebody. I mean, traditionally, the forbidding children to date someone you don't like does not have a great track record. And again, it's not my place. I mean, one would hope that my relationship with my kids is strong enough that we have communication about stuff. And if we don't like one of their partners for whatever reason, then we can be honest with them and say, hey, we have some concerns. But again, if they're going to date them, they're going to date them. And you got to be there to support them when and if bad things happen, I suppose, right? Okay. 20. Is from Kyle. Hello, Kyle. Ah, I've missed you. So, I don't know if you saw on my Facebook, but I went to South by Southwest Gaming Expo and played a 2-hour session of Starfinder. How awesome is Starfinder? Oh my god, dude. Starfinder is so awesome. I love Starfinder. And we got to do ship combat. How awesome is ship combat? Look, so far, we've been in 2 ship combats, and they've both kicked ass. All right, yes, I know there's some flaws with the Starfinder system. They're working some bugs out. By the time they get to edition 1.5 or whatever it is they're going to do, it's going to be pretty tight. And even with the jinky kind of stuff that's in it right now, it's still badass. And the kids love it. The kids love every single moment of it. All right. Everything about, Starfinder is them as action heroes in a way that, I mean, even, look, as much as I love D&D and Pathfinder, there is something about the relatability for them of Starfinder that they talk about it in a different way, and it is so cool. I mean, they're really, really proud of themselves. God, we got to get back to it. But now that Aiden moved out, I mean, it was a group of 3, and now we don't have Aiden, and school started again. And oh, darn it. We haven't played in a long time. We really got to get back to that. 60 is from... There it is. It's from Ronster. Nice. Ronster says... Oh, I already answered this one. What do you want to do on your 50th birthday, 50th anniversary? I knew I lost. Ah, darn it. Okay. Sorry about that. But yeah, on my 50th birthday, I would certainly love to try a replay of my 40th birthday. I don't know if I'm going to be brave enough to do that, where I can bring in all sorts of people from all over the country to come together for a big gathering and just hang out for my birthday for a weekend. My 50th anniversary, hopefully, yeah, every few years on our anniversary, we can take a huge vacation like we did to Canada. That would be cool. I'm pretty sure that's the same answer I gave last time. 90. We've already done 90. 34. 34 is from Kyle. All right. Kyle says, how many different types of poultry have you had? How many different types of birds have I eaten? Chicken, duck, goose, Cornish hen, falcon, squab, turkey, swan. Okay, now rank them! Rank them! Alright, god, jeez. Alright, back off, man. Clearly, I have had, chicken, duck, goose, turkey, you know, Cornish hen, sure. I have never had swan. Never had falcon or any bird of prey for that matter. Quail I've had. And, boy, is that the end of it? Does it end at, quail and pheasant. So, having said that, quail and pheasant both go at the bottom of my list because I am a citified boy and I don't like birds that taste gamey. I just, and there's a definite gamey taste to them. Now, my wife goes so far as she doesn't like the gamey taste of fresh killed chicken and duck. So if it's one that you know her mom went out and you know actually pulled out of the backyard and killed it, cleaned it, dressed it, and had it ready for supper that night, she said she can taste the difference, and she doesn't like that either. I don't know that I've ever eaten chicken that fresh, so I wouldn't know. But having said all of that, I put the game birds, the quail and the pheasant at the bottom. And then to go above that, honestly, I'm putting chicken at the top, followed by the goose and duck, because I can't remember which one was which. I know I've had them both, but followed by goose and duck. And then I'm going to go turkey, which turkey can be really good in lots of forms, but normal turkey is awfully dry most of the time. You really need some good gravy with that. And then the Cornish game hen will go just above the game birds, because the Cornish hen is just too damn tiny. Why? It's just such a lot of work to pick all that the tiny mouthfuls of meat off those teeny tiny little bones. Ugh, gross. So, not worth my time. All right, one more. And that is a 57, and this will be our last one. 57 is from Ronster Sweet. Have you ever eaten Necco wafers on purpose? Yes! Yes, I have eaten Necco wafers on purpose. Twice? Well, not in the same sitting, no. Look. I mean, you see some Necco wafers, they look like candy, right? I mean, you would swear, you see those Necco wafers, you would swear they were candy, and so you try some. And then you go, oh, I'm just eating antacids. Okay, yeah, no, I don't need any more of those, thank you. But, you know, I can get my chalk in other forms. But then, the next time you see it, it's like your brain shorts out and you're like, well, yeah, but it looks like candy. I mean, it can't have been that bad, right? I mean, even bad candy is not that bad, right? And then you eat it and you go, oh, that's right. I forgot. Yeah, no, it's garbage. So, yes, I have eaten Necco wafers on more than one occasion, but never twice in the same sitting. Does that help? Sweet. All right, now it's time for GLaDOS to give us a recap of this week's episode so far.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2018 by Nerd Pride Radio. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. My bumper music this week was Wonderful World by Sam Cooke, and She Blinded Me with Science as performed by William Shatner. All the songs I use are available on iTunes. You check them out there, you buy them, you enjoy them. I wouldn't be putting them in my podcast if I didn't love them. If you want to help out Nerd Pride, subscribe to this podcast in iTunes or whatever podcatcher you use, and write me a nice review or even a really, really crappy review, as long as you give me 5 stars, because that's what makes the difference. But if you want to do something super nice for this podcast, recommend it to your friends. You're enjoying it, so for God's sake, go out and spread the word. Let other people enjoy it as well, because word of mouth is my bread and butter, people. I mean, I don't want you to be obnoxious about it, because, you know, at some point, there's really a level of diminishing returns, because then you become that guy or girl who is just constantly pestering people about your one obsessive podcast, which, and I know you're all like that about Nerd Pride, but yeah, you know, tone it back a little bit. You gotta lure them in first and then crank it on up. All right. But, you know, dole it out. All right. Pace yourself. That's what I'm saying. Remember, I'm always looking for you listeners to do my work for me. Don't forget to send me questions and topics for the Podomatic. Watch out every week on the forums on Facebook for listener betrayal. If you have a really interesting nerd fact about an upcoming episode number, send it to me and save me all of that grueling research. Don't forget, this podcast is a proud member of the Nerd Pride Network, which now includes me, Nerd Pride Radio, and Bicoastal Disorder. Awesome! Which, by the way, Bicoastal Disorder took a short break, but their fourth episode should be coming up soon. Apparently, they're going to be monocoastal for an episode as they've gotten together to record. So that, well, they didn't get together to record, but got together and will record while they're there, presumably. Fingers crossed, hoping that turns out. Anyway, Nerd Pride Network, quality nerd podcasting from quality nerds. That's me. My contact information, mike@nerdprideradio.com, @nerdprideradio on Twitter, facebook.com/nerdprideradio. But to be, you know what? I don't ever go to Twitter. I am taking it out of my credits. I don't go to Twitter. I don't like Twitter. It's not It's never been conducive to anything I want to do. I barely go to Facebook anymore. You know what? My main reason for going to Facebook is just to maintain contact with certain viewers that do the listener betrayal that way. Oh man, social media is just not high on my list of stuff right now. All right, but anyway, for right now, those accounts exist, so you can certainly use them. But to be completely honest, the very best way to talk to me is come sign up for my forums at nerdprideradio.com/nerds. Sign up there, send me a message, we will hang out together, we will become best friends in the world, I will make you part of the Nerd Pride inner circle. We'll have fun. And now it's time for listener betrayal. Before I start recording every podcast, I go out to my forums and to Facebook, although not Facebook this week, but I go out to my forums and to Facebook and I post up, hey guys, I am recording anything you want to post. I will read off at the end of the podcast, which is what I'm doing right now. I actually opened up Listener Betrayal. I knew I'd be recording today for Indigenous Peoples Day, Columbus Day, for those of you who still... That's technically, I have the day off because of Columbus Day, as much as I think that's a gross holiday to celebrate. So knowing that, I posted up yesterday to say, hey, if you guys want to do Listener Betrayal early, 18 hours ahead of time, say whatever you need to say. We'll do an extra long one. And now I can see that there's 5 total responses. So this will be about a normal Listener Betrayal. So pretty cool. Anyway, Listener Betrayal says, I am recording on Columbus Day. Tell me what this week's show is about. And first up is Eliahad, who says, it's about Indigenous Peoples Day. Yeah, you know what? That is absolutely the right answer. I think I said it last year on Columbus Day that they just need to change this day to Indigenous Peoples Day. Let's make it a celebration of the native peoples of this country and this continent, for that matter, and just be done with it and quit celebrating an exploiter, an oppressor, anyway, all the negative things that you can think about Columbus. Yeah, they're all true. So the fact that, anyway, you guys all know the spiel. We shouldn't be celebrating Columbus. So therefore, let's keep the day, let's keep taking it off, but let's make it Indigenous Peoples Day. I'm all about that. Next one is from Eliahad, and he says, it's about your most proud artistic achievement. Oh, all right. Well, look, my most proud artistic achievement is this podcast, because this is 245 episodes. This is probably 300 to 350 hours worth of material, and I'm really proud of what I've done here. But I'm also proud of some of the things I've written. I am certainly proud of my game Pariah that I've published. I am very proud of Instant Game that I published with my brother, and I mean, I think that thing is wonderful. And even if we never publish it, oh my God, I love Godball. I love the board game Godball as a game, and also as an artistic achievement of my own. I think that is amazing. Although, speaking of artistic achievement, oh my God, did you see the Banksy painting at auction? Banksy, the graffiti artist who has gained worldwide fame and notoriety. And they were auctioning off a piece of his. It is a framed painting of a little girl holding a balloon, and they're auctioning it off, and I mean, $1.4 million for this. And now, if you've seen the video, if you've heard the story before, don't give away the ending, okay? $1.4 million, and as soon as the gavel comes down and the guy says, sold, all of a sudden there's this whirring noise. It turns out there is a paper shredder built into the bottom of the frame. And the thing starts shredding the painting. And it just starts sliding down, shredding itself on the way out of the frame. Oh my God. How classic is that? Oh my God. Imagine $1.4 million sold. And all of a sudden, oh my God. So funny. I mean, look. funny to a point. Now, every photo I've seen of it shows the painting frozen halfway. So literally, someone working for Banksy was sitting in the gallery with a remote control in their pocket. As soon as it said sold, this person hit the button and started the shredding, and then it looks like stopped it halfway down. So as it's hanging there, you can still see the balloon is in the half of the painting that is still in the frame. And then the string comes down, and then the little girl holding the balloon, you can still see her form in the shredded papers as they dangled there. They're all still hanging together in proper form. And so you can still see her there. She's just been shredded. And I think that's how it stopped. All right. I think that's where it froze, is that they stopped it at that point. And so whoever paid for it now has the coolest damn piece of work ever. I mean, like you were willing to pay $1.4 million for something that this dude, granted, it's cool, but it's just a little girl holding a balloon. All right. But now you've paid for one that the minute you bought it, it started shredding itself. Can you imagine the panic in that room? Can you imagine thinking that, oh my God, this is it. This whole thing is gone. $1.4 million. It's gone. All right. You know what? I'm going to take a break right this moment. I'm going to look it up and see if it actually shredded the entire thing, or are all the photographs I've seen of it, because every picture of it is frozen on that moment. So, like, nobody got their cameras out in time to catch it, while it was in process. So all the photos are just of this half in, half out state. So I assume that's where it stopped. Otherwise, everyone just happened to catch the exact same shot. But hold on, let me look. Okay, no, I've looked. And apparently it was completely shredded. Which, as the article points out, a competent conservator could easily, take all the shreds and then piece them back together onto another canvas, and you could have the restored vision of all the shredded pieces all put together, which would also still make it pretty goddamn valuable. But the thing about it is, Banksy has been planning this for like 2 or 3 years. Like when he first made the painting, put it in a frame, and it went to whoever it is that he gave it to, he built a shredder into it when he gave it to them years ago. And then basically he says, yeah, I put a shredder in the frame just in case it ever went up for auction so that he could do this. And sure enough, the thing comes up for auction and then someone shreds the painting. And, there was someone in the audience who had a bag with the remote control in it, and this person was not in on what was happening. All they knew is that they were being paid to, hey, as soon as the gavel comes down on this item, hit the button. And so they did. And, now, as cool as all of this is, and as funny as all of this is, Sotheby's, the auction house, a lot of people suspect that they were in on this, that they knew what was going to happen, because they had the painting hanging on a wall during the auctioning of it, rather than just bringing it up and having it on a stand in front of everybody. They actually hung it on the wall, which is unusual for them. They also made it the very last item in the auction, which is, it is theorized that, yeah, because they knew that if they auctioned it off early, then the uproar that had been caused would have disrupted the rest of the auction and possibly ruined sales for other people, and so it was saved for the very last. And so they're guessing that the people selling it knew what was going to happen. But either way, still, great stunt. Caught people off guard. Very funny. I thought it was great. So anyway, this was a question about my greatest artistic achievement, but it made me think of that. So next up, where were we? Aha. The next one is from Eliahad, and he says, the show is about Aiden's mole on his left buttock. Whoa, dude, that is really, really between him and his mole, honestly. I can't speak to that. He's not here. But, Look, I'm the one with the big birthmark on my buttock, so, you know, really this should be all about me. If I understand the format of this show correctly, all about me. All right. Anyway, next up is Mrs. Darks. And Mrs. Darks says, "How awesome is DM Darks?" Oh, DM Darks is so awesome. And then she confirms my sentiment and says, "So freaking awesome. Pretty easy on the eyes, too." Yeah, well, you're biased. What is your favorite? I mean, he is a hottie, I'll give you that. But, I mean, yeah, you know, you've been with him so long that you really, you're not a proper judge anymore. You're too close to the situation. I'll have to confirm for you. Yes. Yes, hot man. So, what is your favorite thing about each character in our Pathfinder game? Okay, God, that is so much to ask, because there are so many of us. So, I mean, first up, like, all right, Dothan. I can't really speak to Dothan. She's my character, and I love her. And she's the best character I've ever played, the longest-running character I've ever played. Anyway, all sorts of great stuff. I love Dothan. But to look at the other characters in the group, Hal, Carvajal, Carvajal, Carvo, Hal. Hal, played by Bill, is our paladin. And I always, there's a weird disconnect because, Bill is himself very much a paladin type. And so playing Hal is a very natural sort of role for him. But he also, Bill is probably the oldest, player in our group, Hal is young and idealistic. And as a paladin, I find that really cool. I like the idealism. Anytime some little role-playing thing reminds me of, oh yeah, that's right. I keep forgetting Hal's a kid. We're all actually really young in this group for the most part. I love that about him. Let's see. Your character, Sam. I like a cleric. I mean, I know you're not a real, you're not, well, not a, I shouldn't say not a real cleric. I know you're not a pure cleric. I can't remember the title. But anyway, I love a cleric, who is role-played, as a true devotee of the faith. And I find that super cool. I like the whole Desna butterfly theme. I like the, I just like Sam. Sam is very cool. Let's see. Anna, I feel bad for Anna, Andrew's character. She's our wizard, and I feel bad for her because she's kind of like our Swiss Army knife of stuff, that whatever our situation is, it's really tempting every time to go, well, Anna, don't you have a spell that just takes care of this for us? Can't we just be done? Come on. It's like she becomes less of a person and more of a just a, hey, it's time to pull out the wizard tool and see what we can do. But, look, that's the way the game is written. Wizards are really super powerful. And honestly, you got to respect that level of power. That's really cool. Let's see. Oh, man, there's so many. Ilian, again, with all of these, it's about the character. It's about the personality. Ilian, I really like the idea that he took a fighter and decided to give him a low strength and a low constitution and then make a fighter out of it, because that's just who he is. And it works. And Ilian is a great character and, a really cool, curmudgeonly type. And I enjoy that. Let's see. Dwyn. I've just always liked Dwyn. Dwyn is, other than Dothan, Dwyn is my second favorite character in the group. And, again, she is a naive farm girl who just happens to have an awful lot of muscle and power and is just, she's very sweet and kind and, again, a little naive and has just stumbled into being this powerhouse bruiser of a character, but all of it comes together and it's very fitting for her. It all works as a piece and I love Dwyn. Let's see, who does that leave me with? That leaves me with Kay and Thor. Kay has so much backstory to her, and there's always some mystery being revealed. I think we've finally gotten past a lot of the mystery at this point, once she settled down and got married and all of that. But I always liked that in in her character as well. She's the group's thief, rogue, whatever. And Thor would be her husband, the ranger in the game, who again, young, idealistic, again, even though he and Kay are now married in the game, you forget that Thor is, I mean, he's really like, what, 19? I mean, he's just a kid. And I really like him. I've always loved Rangers. Always loved Rangers, loved playing Rangers. That style just works for me. It's a very elven sort of thing, even though he's not elven. But, I don't know. I like them all. Is that everybody? Have I hit everyone in the group? Because, man, I would really hate to leave anybody out at this point. That would suck. I think I got it all. Okay. Then the follow-up question to that is, what is Dothan's favorite thing about each of her teammates? Probably the same as mine. I have a tough time separating myself from Dothan. I don't think I can walk through, I don't think I could walk through all of these again, and say anything significantly different from what I've already said. But anyway, I just like our group. It's a good time. Next up is my brother Kyle. And Kyle says, you have the chance right now to turn back time exactly 10 minutes and do everything different. What would you do? I would not ramble on quite so much about all of the characters. I would have made a summary statement that said that I just really like the characters as characters for the development, and then I would have given a little just highlight of each one rather than having to name each one, walk through the explanation, name the next one, walk through it, because that's a little tedious. I feel like that was not, if that was a piece that I could have written out ahead of time and rehearsed, would have come off a lot better. So yeah, if I could turn back time, did I mention I'm going to go see Cher in May? Yeah, anyway. But if I could turn back time 10 minutes, yeah, that's what I would do, is I would tighten up that last bit so I could convey that same information, but really in about half the time that I did, and it would, with a lot less stammering about it. So, there you go. And then the next one is me saying, done, so we're done. That's it. It was a great show. Look, I appreciate you guys being here. Thank you for listening to me and putting up with my rambling. And I love you guys. I will see you next week. We're all awesome. Bye.